So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review me.
Remember the story of Old Yeller? They loved that dog. But when it was time, they had to take that dog out back and finish him. Come Sunday, the showstopper's gonna take you, Old Yeller, behind the woodshed and put you out of your misery. Like I said, I'm putting you out of your misery.
Welcome to Review Away. My name is John Coffee Pollock with Wei Ti Ting.
Yeah.
How are you, Wei
nice.
Ting?
Good one.
Yeah.
I'm great.
No, I'm okay.
You've got a birthday coming up.
So do you.
I do too. Yes. We were born just days apart, you and I. Where were you born, actually, in Toronto? What hospital?
I was born in Hong Kong, man.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so this,
I always forget,
like,
where you were
many
born.
Many times.
I know we've had this discussion. I always forget. Wait, I don't...
It's okay. I don't care.
I don't remember origins of people.
You don't even remember my name.
Wei Chung Ting.
That's pretty good.
I nailed it.
Close enough.
How are you? How does it feel to be in your final days of 30? It's about to be your... It's your actual 30th anniversary of life.
Correct.
Actually, it's not.
No, it's
last
not.
Year was the 30th anniversary.
Let me think about that.
See,
oh, WWE's you're right,
completely
you're right.
Screwed me up now on
yeah,
this
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I hate that. You know, Lance Storm writes all these commentaries. He goes back and watches these WrestleManias and reviews them, and he recently did the...
Why would anybody do that?
That's crazy. Go back and watch old stuff and then talk about it.
What
value does that have to today?
What a waste of time.
But anyway, he recently did WrestleMania 25, and his biggest complaint was promoting it as the 25th anniversary of WrestleMania when it was the 25th WrestleMania. Has always been the gigantic pet peeve of mine. Like, literally, we have the 30th anniversary of WrestleMania is in 3.5 weeks' time.
Yeah.
But they blew it because last year they did it. And I guess they just think people are too dumb to realize, why is the 30th anniversary WrestleMania 31?
Mm-hmm.
Is that much of a mistake on their part?
I think they thought anniversary is somehow a great marketing line. And you can't really do the 25th anniversary at WrestleMania 26. That's just a little confusing. But they really wanted to get that word anniversary in the title. So
what do you think of the... You watch television, and they have quietly phased out the numbering system this year. It's just WrestleMania.
Do they not do a... Oh, okay. But the Super Bowl still does it. You're talking about just WrestleMania.
No, I'm talking about WrestleMania.
Yeah, right. It's the WrestleMania play button.
WrestleMania play.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next year, it'll be WrestleMania buffer.
I mean, I don't think it makes that big of a difference, but...
I think it makes at least a notable one. I like the idea of you number these events.
It's fine. I don't think it'll... In history...
You've built this great legacy of events that I think people... They don't think of... remember who headlined WrestleMania 1989?
But what number of Oscars was it this year, John?
The 82nd.
Was it actually the 82nd?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's pretty good. I should know better than
that. Listen to me. What is the argument? What is the argument for eliminating the number? How about that?
You're right. There's no real argument either. I think in Vince's mind or whoever's mind, maybe it just makes it seem old. Oh man, 31, way over the hill, WrestleMania. You're way past your prime.
It's like if you were the only event in the marketplace that was numbering your events, it's like in our bubble, it's like we just watched UFC 184.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone cares. And the UFC discovered at UFC 100, wow, thank God we didn't get rid of these numbers because it meant a gigantic show.
Well, for sure, they'll probably renumber them. They'll probably bring them back at WrestleMania.
It was the 87th Academy Awards.
Ah, see, there you go. You don't even know. Anyway, so WrestleMania 40. Actually, this happens a lot in comics, actually. You know, they'll often realize that, oh, numbered issues, like the big numbered issues, sell the best. Number ones, number 100s. But at the same time, they also realize that when numbers get to, like, you know, 587, they become completely daunting for new viewers to jump onto. And they also just become hard to remember. Oh, did you pick up issue number 675 or 667 of Fantastic Four this week? No, they just become difficult to remember.
Comics, though, are released in way more regularity than an annual event.
Mm-hmm.
The Super Bowl will never have this problem. I like the fact that they number them.
Yeah,
you don't. It's right. One event a year, and it just chronicles your history.
I agree.
You when you think of Andre and Hogan, you think WrestleMania 3.
True.
You think you just say that number. You associate it with the event. I just like having that. That lineage.
I agree. I think eventually they will. I mean, maybe even next year they'll probably bring the numbering back. I would think so. But I just you're also talking about, you know, in the NFL and sports in general. I mean, people have a much more reverence for the history than in pro wrestling. Fans do too, but the fans do, and I also feel like the people in control of the company probably don't really respect the history as much as the, you know, like internet fans like you and I.
I just think it bugs me more because it's one of those WWE things,
yeah,
where they overthink something to death.
Yeah.
And at a time when, I mean, I just look at it that now more than ever you're selling history to mm-hmm. fans. It's like they look at it as, oh my God, WrestleMania 31, that's so long. Whereas most people look at it and say, wow, the 87th Academy Awards, that's incredible. This has been going on for 87 years. And
right.
I think there's a deep psychological thing to just ageism in the WWE, whether it comes to talent on screen, broadcasters, ring announcers, numbers attached to events.
Yeah. Oh, they want to seem hip.
Vince McMahon on Muscle and Fitness. I mean, look at it. There's a complete just fountain of youth culture within that man's head, a whole culture in between his ears.
Yeah, I think he just really wants to make his product seem hip and current, and I guess you're not current when you're 31.
I guess not, but we'll find out when we go to WrestleMania Play in a couple of weeks. Are you mm-hmm. excited about WrestleMania Play yet?
Yeah, I am.
Excited about our second annual Review Away podcast, Review Away Live 2.
The first anniversary.
The first anniversary. Shouldn't it be the second anniversary if we are in the shadow of the WWE that weekend?
Sure, why not?
The second anniversary?
Second anniversary.
Sure.
Of our WrestleMania meetup.
Which,
our pre-show.
Yes, our pre-show. We are doing our live podcast Sunday, March the 29th. We're at a stage right now where we are... At first, when we did this way, our concern was, man, is anyone going to show up for this? We got a great turnout last year. It looks like we're going to have a record-setting turnout this year. Huge numbers by our standards.
We're not even going to inflate these numbers.
No.
We should inflate. We'll inflate them.
We should make up our number. Like 93 people showed up.
Whoa. Wow.
93 with 173 waiting outside.
Oh my God.
But it's happening Sunday morning, March 29th, 11:30 a.m. Pacific time, where myself and Wei are going to have a live show. We're going to be taking lots of your questions. Wei, Mr. Technology, is setting up everything beautifully.
Don't.
You're in charge of gear. That's how we work. Well, I would find the place, you would find the gear.
If things fuck up, then
it's all on you.
Yeah, it's my fault.
We'll just yell.
We could do that.
It'd be a failed iPay-per-view. We'd just have some bad lighting and the microphones wouldn't work.
I think people are used to us just improvising on these things, so I don't think they'd mind. But what are you saying right now? We're over capacity? Or we might be over capacity?
It's No. There's always room for people. Listen.
Okay.
We always will make room for people.
Yeah.
So we hope to see you at the Smoking Pig Barbecue. I guess we should mention the location for those of you that are considering.
Excited for everything that weekend.
Do you know how much stuff is going on that weekend? Every single day, there's more stuff happening.
Well, you're telling me I might have a grappling match to prepare for.
It's possible.
If I could work, exactly. If these details could be worked out.
Where do we stand? I mean, I'm kind of just the observer.
Listen, I threw out the challenge on Monday. We got to wait for Court Bauer's response on Bauer and Pollock this week.
Wow. Well, that's going to happen later tonight. We got to find out.
Mm-hmm.
You're ready. I've seen you. You're training. Wei is actually training with larger people at Open Mat.
Oh, yeah.
Just to prepare. He is specifically catering his training camp for Court Bauer.
And I hope Court is able to find, you know, maybe 150-pound skinny people to train with as well.
I understand he's cutting weight. He's trying to meet you.
Is he trying to meet me at 150 pounds? He's going to have to maybe chop a head off or chop a leg off.
See, I think his size could be his advantage, but then you look at... I mean, you are very difficult to submit. Very difficult. It is demoralizing.
What are you, Joe Rogan? You're trying to really push both of us, huh?
I am, of course. I'm the talking head here. I've got to build
this up. Can you talk like Joe Rogan?
No, I can't. I can't be Joe Rogan. I can't. I'm being honest, though, Wei. I have rolled
No, don't do this right now.
I am.
What John often does is... he will make, like, whenever he talks about jiu-jitsu and me doing jiu-jitsu, he makes it seem like I'm this, like, unbeatable beast, this master.
I'm not saying that at all.
I am the farthest thing from it. I'm a beginner. I get tapped out every night on a regular basis. Even, by people my size, people smaller than me. But when John talks about it, you're very nice.
What the criteria was on the last curriculum for me? Do you know what the final...
Oh, by the Wei, congratulations to John Pollock receiving his second stripe on his white belt.
Thank
you. This past weekend from Open Mat.
Well,
during the belt test.
We had to know six things in and out. And you know what number six was?
Be confident.
Confidence, Wei.
Yeah.
Confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Take a compliment.
Express confidence. I am. I do take...
You break my balls when I'm too harsh on myself.
I do take compliments. At the same time, I also believe in being realistic and not giving a false impression.
Well, I'm just saying, I think you're... When I was rolling with you last week, and I finally got to Wei's back, and I thought I had him with this choke... And I, in my head, I'm like, I finally got him. And I'm waiting and I'm waiting. I'm like, fuck, I don't have him. I don't have him. I thought this thing was tight. And then Wei broke it down for me. It was not tight. But man, what a mental breaking. My mind started crying.
Wow.
My mind said, not enough. Not good enough. You are not ready for bronze medalist. Wei Teeting.
Yeah, you should really be in charge of these countdown shows for the UFC.
I would love to.
I think you do a beautiful job of dramatizing a very, very standard.
Dude, those countdown shows, the amount of material they have at the end of these countdown shows must be just hours and hours and hours of people like me talking about this, and the smallest amount that makes it into that show.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, I did it once because it was fun, but I would definitely think twice if I was asked to do it again.
Really?
Because it was... Wei, could you imagine us talking here about tonight's Raw? We're going to spend 45 minutes talking about this Raw.
Yeah.
And I edit it, and it's a 90-second recap.
Right. I mean, but that happens. You know, you and I have made documentaries before. You take the very best stuff that fits into the story you're trying to tell.
Well, I mean, that's fine. That's fine. I did it for the experience, but now I've had that experience. So
right, okay.
I'm not dying to do that again and essentially have a conversation with someone that the two of us are going to have. And this camera, it just happens to be there and very little of it makes it. Like, you know.
No, maybe
that was done on a Friday night.
Yeah.
spent, it was me and Agnew that did it. So I was there. It was like a 90-minute deal there for 2 minutes. That's how TV works. I get it.
So if anybody interviews John for a documentary in the future, make sure you use a lot of his talking.
I'm not saying that.
Or only interview him for maybe 2 minutes if you're going to use 90 seconds.
Well, that's it. I mean, when we did our documentary way, I went in with the idea of what do we want out of this person? What are the key things? I'm not going to ask the same thing to every single guy.
Yeah, what if that person is like not that good though? Turns out to be not that great. And you're just trying to like, you know, not to say it, you're probably excellent, but let's say we...
Oh, you mean like the interview is like you get what you need and then you finish after 3 minutes?
No. Oh. I mean like you're trying to fish for something really... Or maybe you just like have somebody who just talks a lot but is... But you have other people saying the same thing and then you're just kind of like deciding who, you know, oh, okay, we might as well just use this guy. We've had him on before.
Yeah. I mean, you can run into that, I'm sure.
Okay.
Oh, so, did I mentally defeat you there?
Yeah.
You just had a big sigh of just, fuck off.
Yeah. It's sort of the point in the podcast where I think I feel...
That's your transition.
Like, yeah, we should move on.
Well, we can move on to Raw. This was the Raw going into WrestleMania 24. As per your choice, you wanted to go watch this. I found it very interesting that we selected this WrestleMania that we're going to review next week. And then this past weekend, man, the WWE Network aired the hell out of WrestleMania 24. Multiple airings of this WrestleMania. The companion device to reveal away, the WWE Network.
Well, it's, maybe we should reveal, finally. Yes, we work for the WWE Network.
We've been there for years.
We are
since the developmental stages.
Yeah, you're talking to the executive programmers of the network, and tonight...
I interview everybody for Countdown, and I ask them 4 questions, and it all makes it there.
I think it's time to reveal the truth that we've been in talks with Vince McMahon and the WWE for years about starting this network, just as a way to promote our podcast, as a vehicle to promote Review Away.
It's brilliant.
We've nearly bankrupted the company in the process.
Yeah.
But I think it's worth it. We got a few more downloads.
It's been great.
Yeah, great.
We're
for
revealing
us.
It to everybody here for the first time.
You know what I've been doing is actually the Twitter account. There's like a WWF Twitter on the WWF Twitter. They always do like, oh, on this day in history, such and such happened. And last week it was
No Way Out 2001.
Yeah. And I'll always just, like, post links to, like, our shows.
Yeah.
In the comments.
That's great.
Yeah.
So now the secret's out. So I guess we're going to get a lot of WrestleMania 24 and WrestleMania 3 coverage on the network over the next month. That's what people can look forward to.
For sure.
Well, March the 24th of 2008, they were at the University of South Carolina. Notable here in the Carolinas, because this was what could have been Ric Flair's final Raw going into this career-threatening match at WrestleMania. And lots of the focus of this show was built around Ric Flair going into this match with Shawn Michaels, which had not been the greatest of builds. They came up with this idea where Vince McMahon put out this ultimatum where Ric Flair would have to win every match from here on out, or else he would have to retire. And it was really kind of fumbled along the way. They would do some creative finishes to get Flair out of it, put him in matches where, I mean, the drama just wasn't fully there. Then they made the match with Shawn Michaels, and, you know, you had half the people who were not really into the whole Flair program to where it could be. This is Flair's big send-off program, and you had others saying, well, what a waste. It should be a young guy. It should be a Mr. Anderson who should beat Ric Flair at WrestleMania, which, my God, in hindsight, if you could go back.
Yeah.
Sometimes you go with the safe bet, and I think history will dictate that the decision was fine to go with Shawn Michaels as the WrestleMania opponent.
You know, so
I get that understanding that, you know, it's same with like the criticisms of The Undertaker last year. It's that you want a young guy to beat them, but I always look at the flip side that you might get the reverse effect where it's a curse for that young guy who everyone just turns on because look at this is the guy who beats Ric Flair. This is the guy that beats The Undertaker. It's a lot to put on somebody young. And the way this turned out, hard to complain about it after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
So we go into Raw, the old Papa Roach theme. opens the show. And our announcers are Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler. And we got a classic Raw segment to start the show. John Cena comes out, just a heavily scripted start to this promo, rattling through all that has gone down in between Triple H and Randy Orton. This came off more like a man reciting like a Dr. Seuss book rather than a intense wrestling promo going into the biggest event of the year. He says on Sunday they will dance, and he waged war with 17 men last week. But before he can go on, it is the first of many interruptions, this one being the Big Show, who comes out. He says that this year's WrestleMania will be known for ending the career, the boxing career of Floyd Mayweather Jr. He says that even Mayweather's family is pulling for the Big Show, and that he is going to replace the image of Hogan slamming Andre as the most replayed moment in WrestleMania history when he destroys Floyd Mayweather. That leads to JBL, come on down. He says he's going to make history at WrestleMania, and he already has revealed the identity of Vince McMahon's leprechaun bastard son, and put that mutant in the hospital, and this led to his feud with Finlay, the real father of Hornswoggle, and making us greatly question this WrestleMania and what was being set up. He says that his match with Finlay has no rules, and he's going to give Finlay the biggest beating in WrestleMania history. John Cena replies that he wasn't listening to anything JBL was saying. Randy Orton then comes out. I'm only halfway through the people coming out during this segment. He comes out. He's the WWE champion at the time. He says people don't think he's going to retain the title, but he feeds off of that doubt. Then Umaga comes out, and he takes the microphone from Orton, and he looks at the microphone in amazement at what this little mechanism is going to produce. And he cuts a promo in Samoan on Batista. Cena translates this because John Cena, you know, is fluent, saying that Umaga loves boy bands, sperm whales, and loves the show My Two Dads.
Hilarious.
So, man, John Cena of 2008, a grating performance here in this opening segment. Then Triple H comes out. He plugs his new T-shirt. He says, one reason we are all here, it's for the WWE title. And he calls himself, Orton, and Cena the biggest stars in the business. There's a subtle fuck you to everybody else. And said he's glad there's no roof at the Citrus Bowl on Sunday, because they would blow the roof off of the stadium if there was one. And that is why they are having it at the Citrus Bowl. And the King of Kings goes back on his throne on Sunday. And the final person to come out is William Regal, after everyone's yelling and arguing in the ring. And he says he will give them all the chance to prove who is the biggest draw going into WrestleMania with an 8-man, no disqualification match tonight with Orton, Umaga, teaming with JBL and Big Show against John Cena, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, and Ric Flair.
Triple H.
Triple H in what would turn out to be Ric Flair's final match in Raw history on television.
Monumental.
17 minutes to start Raw. Holy Christ, was this long.
Yeah.
And so little creativity. Just marching everyone out to talk about their match. This was like all the candidates before the nomination for the party's official to go into an election.
This was definitely like something that could have easily played out exactly the same in a video game career mode, where you just have, you know, all your wrestlers come out and talk, and then you have the general manager come out and make a match with all the people. It's just a classic, pretty lazy way of starting off a show and booking the whole show. But whatever. It's fine. Cena was just, I mean, this guy was annoying.
Grating.
He was annoying even back then. So, okay. That's the show.
Fuck this segment, is what Wei's saying. Our first match was Intercontinental Champion Chris Jericho and CM Punk taking on MVP and Carlito. I enjoyed at the beginning, they were running through the sponsors for Raw, and Jim Ross was selling us Sendalog.com with the tagline, "It's the new email." Sendalog.com.
The hell was that?
It sounds like a prank you would pull in high school on some guy you hate. sendalog.com. It's the new email. Sendalog did not quite catch on. MVP is the U.S.
Did you get my Sendalog?
No, it's still in the air somewhere. Jericho's the IC champ, MVP the U.S. champ. All of these four are in the Money in the Bank ladder match coming up at WrestleMania. Jericho hit a springboard dropkick that sent Carlito to the floor. They went through a commercial break. Jericho landed on his feet from a lion salt, hurt his knee, and then goes for the walls. MVP then comes in. The walls are applied to him. Then Carlito is sent to the floor. They have the heat on Jericho. And then MVP misses a running boot in the corner, allowing Jericho to tag Punk. Punk hits his running knee in the corner to MVP, kicks Carlito off the apron, and then hits a bulldog to MVP, but misses a springboard clothesline. Jericho comes in. He goes for an enziguri to MVP, but MVP ducks, and Jericho takes out Punk, and MVP pins Punk for the win. So four guys that you can look at. What drastic different places they're in today. We have soon-to-be UFC fighter CM Punk. TNA.
Man, who, by the way, had some of the worst-looking work kicks I've ever seen, especially in this match.
This was babyface. I don't want to say bland CM Punk, but in comparison to years later, I mean, this was very much a watered-down CM Punk that had very little character at the time. I mean, he was in ECW at the time, wasn't really a main roster guy.
Yeah, but I mean, specifically those kicks, they're just fucking terrible. And I would just love to see his first day at Rufus Sport demonstrating,
pull up this match,
demonstrating these kicks, and then
Anthony Pettis just puts his head down.
I'm assuming he's a lot better now.
This was also after Jericho's return from the prior fall. He was still a babyface at this point, and before he would have that big heel run with Shawn Michaels. And at this point, the return of Chris Jericho had been pretty lackluster. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had just kind of phased back into this mid-card role. They put the Intercontinental title on him. He was very much just slotted as a middle-of-the-pack guy. And in the Money in the Bank match, no less, didn't feel a big star at this point. But that would very much change after WrestleMania when the Michaels feud took off. And it was the biggest run of Chris Jericho's career. They had a tape promo with Mr. Kennedy about WrestleMania getting better and better every year, and he makes some WrestleMania predictions. He says that Ric Flair is going to retire, the Undertaker's streak will end, and he will win the Money in the Bank ladder match.
So, yeah, okay. I mean, I know a lot of people saw a lot of potential in him, but to me, I just thought he was another guy.
Well, he had won the Money in the Bank the prior year, and then he had had a misdiagnosis of a torn biceps and ended up losing the briefcase and just kind of fell apart in 2007. But at one point, really poised to be a top guy in the company. And a year later, I think people were still hoping he would recapture that. But just over a year after this point, he'd be let go. So that was kind of the Ken Kennedy very much in limbo at this point in the company. He says he's going to win the Money in the Bank, cash it in, and the story of WrestleMania 24 will be Mr. Kennedy. Spoiler, it was not. Then they aired this great video feature on Ric Flair done to the song Leave the Memories Alone. And it featured tons of NWA footage, WWF footage, clips with infamous opponents, including Dusty Rhodes, Harley Race, Sting, Ricky Steamboat, Hulk Hogan, Randy Orton, and then the slippery slope of Vince McMahon and the Great Khali. The legendary programs you associate Ric Flair with. And then coming out of the video, they showed his children at ringside who were with him, and this would be not only the retirement match on Sunday, but going into the Hall of Fame the night before. So,
right, Charlotte was there.
Charlotte was there. Might have been at least one of the first times we ever saw her on WWE television, maybe a cameo here or there for some prior matches. But certainly this week, going into WrestleMania, the big focus was the Ric Flair-Shawn Michaels match. That seemed to be the match in the last couple of days coming out of Raw that felt like the biggest match on the show, in my opinion.
Absolutely, by far.
Like, Floyd was getting all the mainstream attention, but the match that I think people were really into was Flair and Michaels, and their promo later on was what I think really got people into gear for the match.
Yeah, I think you're talking about the culmination of, you know, I think it was very believable at this point that this would have been the end for Ric Flair. I mean, they had spent a number of, weeks, you know, building up that whole storyline. And I certainly, it seemed to be taken a lot more seriously than this Big Show Mayweather fight.
Well, we went to a training video for the Big Show with his trainer, Artie Artwell, breaking down Mayweather's style. And they note that Mayweather can't have that power hitting up. And yeah. His trainer ends it by saying, it's going to be bad weather for Mayweather. Zing.
Yeah, I like these. I mean, you know, like I said, not really something you're watching for the drama of. It's more so for the spectacle and, honestly, the comedy of seeing a giant take on this little guy. And I thought Show just seemed like he was a real fan, you know, had some real boxing knowledge and seemed to know a little about, you know, Mayweather's actual boxing abilities and style. And you could tell he was, like, having fun. You know, like, this was a thrill to get to work with this guy.
Yeah, I mean, this was Big Show's most high-profile match of his entire career. And, I mean, this wasn't even the original idea. Originally, they were going to have Rey Mysterio involved in this. They tried to reach out to Oscar De La Hoya because Mayweather and De La Hoya had their 2.4 million buy fight the prior year. That wasn't going to happen. And then Rey got injured and would miss WrestleMania altogether. So this was their kind of backup plan to use Floyd Mayweather. What did you think about using Big Show in that role? Because at first Floyd was presented as the babyface, and they somewhat had to change course during the feud.
I like the spectacle of seeing a giant with this tiny little guy. The babyface and heel dynamic certainly could, you know, was a little confusing because you had Big Show here who's supposed to be a heel, and Mayweather who's just a naturally sort of an unlikable character.
And the outsider.
And an outsider as well. But, I mean, that never really stopped people from liking Mike Tyson, you know? I think it's just more so the fact that he just comes across as this very natural, cocky, unlikable guy. And I'm sure that's something maybe they didn't expect.
Mm-hmm. So our next match was The Great Khali against Hardcore Holly. Hardcore Holly was one half of the World Tag Team Champions at the time with Cody Rhodes. And they announced that both of these men would be part of the pre-show Battle Royal, with the winner getting a shot at the ECW title on the pay-per-view portion of WrestleMania.
Wow.
So high stakes involved at WrestleMania 24 for these two. Khali just hits him with a clothesline, beats down on Holly, applies a nerve hold, chops him on the shoulder, and Holly sells it as death, and then takes a tree slam, and Khali makes quick work of Holly in 1 minute, 51 seconds.
No reaction at all for either man, especially the Great Khali. Just time fill.
They got their juice out of the Great Khali, and at this point, he was very much sticking around. There was actually, I would say, a solid year where they really protected this guy, and they had the Undertaker feud, the John Cena program, and at this point, the Great Khali was, this was the Great Khali that we would look forward to for years to come in some comedy. Then Ric Flair came out. He says he's happy that some people respect him, notes that he beat Vince McMahon last week, but it was with the assistance of Shawn Michaels, and he's very unhappy about it because he told Michaels not to get involved, and by Michaels entering the match last week, it showed that Michaels didn't have confidence in Flair to win on his own, and he calls out Michaels. So Michaels comes out in his HBK cowboy hat, says he was just giving him backup, and he puts over all of Flair's accomplishments, goes over his catchphrase, and then Flair just cuts him off, telling him to shut up.
Mm-hmm.
And Flair had brought out this pouch with the NWA championship inside of it, and talks about winning this title in 1981, lists off all the men he has fought in his career, and Flair says he picked Michaels to prove he can still be the Nature Boy on the grandest stage, and he wants Michaels to bring the best out of him on Sunday, and he needs this. He needs this for one more night in his career to keep him going. And Michael says he's going to give him everything, and he's going to give him the showstopper, Shawn Michaels, as they shake hands. And Michaels then goes to leave, but he can't help himself. He needs to share his story to Flair of Old Yeller, and says, with Old Yeller, they loved that dog. But when it was time, they had to finish him and take him out back. And on Sunday, he's going to take Old Yeller out to the woodshed and put Ric Flair out of his misery.
Mm-hmm.
He is going to put a bullet to the head of Ric Flair's career. And Flair just tosses down the title. He unbuttons his shirt. He stomps on his jacket and just starts going Ric Flair nuts. He smacks his face, and that cowboy hat flies off of Shawn Michaels' head. He slaps him again and dares Michaels to do it right now and put him out of his misery right at this moment. And Michaels just calmly says that Sunday he will be put out of his misery. Easily the best segment on this show. And this was the moment that this match and this whole storyline involving Ric Flair, to me, hit what people wanted out of it. I just love this segment.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Really the only thing worth watching on this entire show, in my opinion. You know, especially starting off with Sean comes out and just kind of initially tries to be all friendly, and then Ric just comes back telling him to shut up right as Sean, you know, gets into the whole jet flying, limousine riding thing. And then to take out the NWA title, the original NWA title, which
yes.
At this point was a TNA title, wasn't it?
I guess at this point it was, yeah, right around the time that they were transitioning. Yeah.
So, I mean, this rarely seen visual inside, you know, any WWE ring, for sure. It's kind of striking to see, and it makes it seem that much more real and puts things into perspective about just how long this man's career has been. And I think Flair, you could tell a lot of it, you know, clearly wasn't really scripted. You know, you have two of the best here. And Flair, you know, has been known to kind of go off the rails when he improvises often, especially in recent years. But I thought in this, he went, in this he was great. I thought he was fantastic. I thought his delivery, kind of like that stuttering delivery he has when he's like trying to be really serious, I thought it was really good. And that Old Yeller story, you know, which would become a much bigger deal in the match itself, I thought was told very well too.
Yeah, so I don't think you could ask for a better final promo to set up WrestleMania. And as I said, I mean, this program, it was not on fire going into this, but this final promo really felt, it made you feel this was the most important match coming up on Sunday. Then they had a video on Floyd Mayweather, laughs about breaking the Big Show's nose the prior month at the No Way Out show, which was a great angle to kick this off with, where Big Show was making his return after a sabbatical from the company, and then Floyd Mayweather ends up being brought into the ring, punches him in the nose, breaks his nose. It was just an incredible visual. And then Big Show chasing after Mayweather and his entourage in the crowd. It was a great angle to set this up.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had some problems along the way to get to the match.
What's the story behind the nose break?
It was just the spot was scripted, and it was just, unfortunately, it was Mayweather's.
Did he pull back at all, or did he just, like, hit as hard as he could?
I think he just, I don't think he was intending to break his nose, but it's one of those things in wrestling where this mistake actually turned out to be great. It made it feel real and was going to get a lot of attention. Here's Floyd Mayweather, and a guy that has had so many hand issues. Here he is punching a guy with his bare hands and breaks his nose with them.
And Joe's nose was able to heal?
Yeah. I mean, it was – he had his nose all, like, taped up for a couple weeks afterwards. Mm-hmm. So – anyway, they show the video. He says he's quicker and more athletic than the Big Show. And he pulls up a pair of the Big Show's jeans that he says he's using for drapes inside of his house, and then destroys a Big Show action figure and smacks it. And being as cocky as possible about his lifestyle that he lives, and just painting him as the Floyd Mayweather you would expect, the one that is going to have the most value to you as a company.
Yeah, I think, you know, part of the reason he's so successful on pay-per-view is because he's able to play such a great heel. And I wonder if this feud would have worked better with somebody maybe like a Rey Mysterio or somebody, you know, more of a classic underdog babyface rather than putting him in that underdog role.
Right. Then we had Maria against Melina, and Maria had recently lost her partner, Candice Michelle, when she had re-injured her clavicle in her first match back on TV, and this had messed up plans for their Bunny Mania match. It was going to be Maria and Candice against Melina and Beth Phoenix. Beth Phoenix was out here in the corner of Melina. Maria got tripped by Beth coming off the turnbuckle, and it quickly just led to Ashley Massaro storming the ring, and all four are in the ring. There were lots of boos to this. Santino Marella comes out, and then Jerry Lawler gets up from the desk, enters the ring, attacks Santino, sends him to the floor, and then Regal comes out to make an intergender six-man match with Lawler, Maria, and Ashley taking on Beth Phoenix, Melina, and Santino Marella. And Jim Ross explains the difference between a mixed tag match being that it can only be the same sex involved during the match, whereas intergender means anyone can fight anybody. So
is that actually a rule?
Yeah, it is.
Then intergender and mixed?
Yeah. This was actually reiterated on this past week's Impact by Taz.
Oh.
This exact same differentiation between the two. Ashley and Melina were in. It was not very good for the minute it lasted. Maria was tagged in, hit a Bronco Buster to Melina, and then Maria went for a handspring into a head scissors, but Melina blocked it, tagged in Beth. Santino knocks Lawler off the apron, gets slapped by Maria, and then is double-teamed by the women, and the heels clip the knee of Maria as Morella is being attacked by Lawler on the floor. Morella rolls back in, and he pins Maria and gets the win.
Mm-hmm.
That was that. Our intergender tag match. John Cena's in the back, just hanging out with his buds, Cody Rhodes and Val Venus. I'm sure having just a prolific conversation, maybe asking them about their thoughts on the pre-show Battle Royal coming up. And then Triple H walks in. He stares down Cena as Rhodes and Venus just bail. And Hunter brings up the loss he had to John Cena at WrestleMania 22 and how much it has burned a hole inside of him. He says he knows he didn't get beaten by the better man that night, and on Sunday he is going to mow down John Cena. Cena says he's had to sit back and watch a man with his title when he never lost it due to his injury the prior fall, and said he is going to be the one winning the title on Sunday. They announced that John Legend, who is playing the piano, is going to come to WrestleMania.
Yeah. The whole time, the feud is between Triple H and John Cena. Where's Randy Orton in all this?
He's a champion.
He just, like, got no airtime at all.
Yeah, this was the year that Cena made that surprise return at the Rumble. And then instead of having the title match at WrestleMania, they did it a month early at the February pay-per-view. And then we got a three-way for WrestleMania. And I just thought it was the first year I was really thought it was flat that you had your Rumble winner. And you kind of just, you didn't do it at WrestleMania. You prolonged it into a three-way. And I mean, this three-way to me
seems to happen a lot. Anytime you have a three-way at WrestleMania, it's because they fucked up somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. And then we had Hunter, who was the second to last guy in the Rumble, end up getting back into the main event. Well, the title match at WrestleMania. I just thought it was a pretty flat build-up for this three-way.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't one of the standout matches that year. Anyway, John Legend, his excitement just contagious here, announcing that he was coming to WrestleMania.
Hey, I'm John Legend. In just a couple days, I make my WrestleMania debut. I'll be performing America the Beautiful in front of millions of WWE fans across the world. Now, I've done my fair share of touring, but I know WrestleMania is going to be an experience like no other. I'm excited to be a part of it, and I look forward to seeing you and all your friends at WrestleMania.
I think reading off a prompter of what event he had coming up on Sunday. Then they plugged the Hall of Fame with the final inductee to be announced the next night on ECW. And then they ran through the WrestleMania card and the announcement that the new Bunny Mania match would be Maria and Ashley against Beth and Melina, with Snoop Dogg as the master of ceremonies.
Yes.
What a big match. You're looking forward to that?
Sure.
Then they had a video feature on the WWE title match. Pretty much the story was Hunter was injured for last year's WrestleMania. Cena tore his pec 6 months ago. And now two guys are back from injury to face the champion, Randy Orton. That's our story.
It seems like a rather weak story. Like, it seems like a story that wasn't, of all your possibilities, you know, like, that they had, it didn't seem like this was the idea that somebody came up with from the beginning. It seemed more like like I said, like a Band-Aid solution. And try to make a little video out of that. To make sense of this.
And even at 2008, you say John Cena, Triple H, Randy Orton. It was like already at that time, any combination of those three, it was just, there was no excitement.
Boring.
It was just, we have seen these combinations, and now you're putting all three of them together, and it's instead, like, of there being a new wrinkle to this dynamic, there was less.
It's like pepperoni, green peppers, cheese. That's it.
Couldn't be said better.
Dude, like, come on, get creative here. Add some, like, bacon or, like, avocado or just, I don't know, what's a new pizza flavor?
I don't know. All the pineapple ham, sure, is in the Money in the Bank ladder match.
Yeah, I guess who would be the pineapple?
CM Punk, because it was just non-traditional, and often you order it and it ends up not arriving.
Yeah. Okay, wow.
I don't know. It goes off to do buffets.
Buffets?
I don't know. What's an alternative to ordering pizza?
Hamburgers?
Sit-down restaurants. Where you gotta make reservations to get it. Not just fast food and processed.
But, you know, this main event was basically just, you know, it was the deluxe. It was the cheese, pepperoni, and green pepper of WrestleMania main event.
You know, it was the turning point for the pineapple.
What?
The pep bomb. Wow, we're already at the main event here. This was a really quick review here of this Raw.
I don't know if it needs to be any longer. I think we could stop right now after that.
No, this was a huge, huge eight-man. This was Ric Flair's final WWE match on television.
Oh, my God.
Randy Orton, JBL, Umanga, and Big Show against John Cena, Ric Flair, Shawn Michaels, and Triple H. Orton and Michaels started the match. God, was this a lazy put-together match. It was just, God, like, literally watching processed food be made. It was just one after the other. First, we had Finlay come out. All of these run-ins to their music, no less. Fights off JBL. They go up the ramp and they exit. They get the heat on Shawn Michaels. Umaga's in and goes for the Samoan spike. When Batista shows up to his music, they fight on the floor, make it to the back, they're gone. Then Big Show hit this big beel to Shawn Michaels, and Flair is tagged in. Big Show is beating down on Ric Flair until John Cena and Hunter come in. They double-team Big Show, but Show blocks a vertical suplex. He suplexes both of them. Orton is just content to have Big Show do the whole match, but then Show tosses Randy Orton into the ring, and he chokeslams Orton, steps on him, and Big Show leaves on his own, because I guess they didn't have a date for Floyd Mayweather on this go-home show. Hunter goes for a pedigree. Cena stops him, applies the STFU to Orton. Hunter breaks that. Hunter and Cena then fight to the floor, leaving Shawn Michaels and Ric Flair on the babyface side. Flair goes for the figure four, and Michaels punches Flair to stop it from being applied. Fans boo this, and then Flair gets onto his knees and low blows Michaels from behind. Flair comes up, gets the figure four, big reaction as he applies it to Randy Orton, and Orton furiously taps out with both hands, giving the nice send-off with Ric Flair going into WrestleMania with the idea that, hey, maybe he'll win this match and he'll get one last run at the title. And doing this in the Carolinas, no less, it was a feel-good moment for Ric Flair. So this whole show was really, you take out Ric Flair, I can't say this was a great go-home show, but Flair was the difference on this show for me.
And I thought it was especially poor for Orton, who really seemed like he was, you know, sort of in like the Miz situation and heading into his main event as the champion for the show. Just the complete afterthought, I thought.
Well, everyone figured Orton was losing the title, and I guess the idea was, well, we're going to swerve people and keep it on Randy Orton, and we'll switch it at a future pay-per-view.
Well, you got me. Yeah. Damn it.
You're right. I think this champion sucks.
You know, as well in this main event, they do it a lot where they'll have, because they're all faces, they'll split the faces and heels. But in the case of this match, you have Triple H and John Cena who really are the main rivalry heading into the main event. And I just think it's silly at any time, you know, especially the week of your big pay-per-view to have anybody in a match coming up together be on the same side of a team and working together. I feel like a Jon Jones and a Daniel Cormier the week before their pay-per-view would not be doing anything together. You know, I'm supposed to feel like they hate each other. They can't even be in the same room together doing interviews. So I just even think putting your baby faces here, or at least putting your opponents here in the same side of a match working together, even though they didn't really work together, I didn't think that was the best.
Well, that was your setup for WrestleMania 24. And we've done this many years of doing the go-home Raw. I think for this one, it was the night after Raw that's maybe the more memorable one.
Oh, so we shouldn't have done this show?
No, I'm not saying that.
We wasted our time.
No, there was a very good segment on this Raw.
Okay.
I wasn't. Let's put it this way. At the end of this Raw, going back, I was very excited for one match going into to WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. We'll see what they do on Sunday at WrestleMania 24 in Orlando.
Mm.
All right. Let's get into your feedback. See what people had to say about this particular edition of Raw from 2008. Aram writes, "It was a fine lead-up to WrestleMania. I guess it's most remembered for the old Yeller promo from HBK. I did, however, feel the title match really suffered from promoting Flair, HBK, and Big Show Mayweather. But I guess that was more than fair enough. And wow, how forgotten was the Batista-Umaga feud. I know how long ago they tried to get Lennox Lewis in against Brock Lesnar. But have they ever gone after the Klitschkos? 7, whatever happened to Hardcore Hollies out of 10? Not to my knowledge have they ever reached out to the Klitschkos to do any kind of pro wrestling. I don't know really how much. I mean, the Klitschkos are huge in Europe and certainly within boxing. I mean, the dominant heavyweights of this generation. But as crossovers, especially for a company that does so much of their pay-per-view business in North America, I don't feel the Klitschkos would have been a great fit. I think they would have had to do a lot of work building either one of them up to...
Oh, man, imagine them with Rusev.
Oh, that would be a hell of a Survivor Series team. You get the Klitschkos and, I mean, Fedor.
Fedor.
Oh.
Done.
That was great. With Vladimir Putin as the manager.
Oh, ho, ho, ho.
I mean, the, yeah, the EU. They would be great.
Mm-hmm.
And Lana. Could be tremendous.
Of course.
So, yeah, nothing to the Klitschkos. But, yeah, the Lennox Lewis one was totally legit that they were talking about the No Way Out show in 2003 of doing Lesnar and Lennox Lewis in a legit match along with Kurt Angle and Michael Moore, the boxer, not the documentary maker. So,
I mean, you know, they have a very long history of working with boxers in for WrestleMania and for just all their events in general. Why have they not kind of made the same attempts with the UFC fighters?
I think that they look at the UFC, it's, I think, much closer to actual... I think they view boxing as separate to them, whereas mixed martial arts, they'll never say it, but I think they see mixed martial arts as much closer to a competitor to them than they view boxing as. And also, I think that... I don't think that there's necessarily that connection. I think that you look at least years past, like Triple H... The Vince McMahon, I think they've always looked at boxing as the legitimate combat sport, and I don't think they've always viewed mixed martial arts as that. Certainly there are fighters that you could have utilized, but we've never seen it done to a big degree like with Floyd Mayweather. We've seen, you know, Quentin Jackson did that one-off on the show, but nothing substantial. Mm-hmm. But I think something could be done. I think you could absolutely there would be more. There would be more of a crossover.
Yeah, we've seen TNA attempt it.
TNA has attempted it, yes. Mm-hmm. From Frank Trigg,
Quentin
Jackson. I mean, yeah. Hammer's involved. Yes, they have attempted it.
Okay, we go to Matt in suburban Detroit, who says the downside of reviewing a show from so recent is that it really felt exactly like a show from today, except shorter. Is it that recent?
It was 2008. Yeah. It was like 7 years ago.
This is not. Really all that recent.
There are fans who probably attended Raw on Monday night that were not born when this happened. So, I mean, I think that's more an indictment of where the show has progressed just in terms of a look. I mean, you're completely right.
And the
move some pieces around.
And the roster.
Yeah, I mean, there's been some turnover of the roster. But watching this show, if I had told you this was a show from 2013,
mm-hmm.
you would probably buy it if you weren't following.
Yeah. Jericho and Punk versus MVP and Carlito was great. Jericho versus MVP had a great match on SmackDown that week. All the Ric Flair stuff brought it home that, yes, Flair was retiring. 3 out of 10 for the quality, 10 out of 10 for the length.
10 out of 10 for the length. Gaurav from Portugal. Wow, a 2-hour Raw with Jim Ross calling it. What a breath of fresh air. Big Show and Mayweather's feud was top-notch. It made Big Show look like such a special attraction. The old Yeller promo by Shawn Michaels is one of the best he's ever delivered. Shawn is awesome when it comes to storytelling, even through his facial expressions. Flair held his own in that segment as well. Hey, Roman Reigns, that's how you cut a damn promo. Believe that. Rest of the show was pretty boring. I give it 6 Regal Umangas out of 10.
We go to Mohan from Hong Kong. As far as go-home shows go, this was as intense as they come with everything happening here, putting over the WrestleMania show big time. The opening segment was fun, only to be upstaged by Umaga speaking. That was weird. The crowd reactions were beautiful at the end of that. The highlight of the show was, of course, the Flair-HBK confrontation. Flair went berserk towards the end, and that tiny part brought me back memories of his WCW promos in 1999. A deliberate main event where, as expected, the heels were taken off early so that the faces can turn on each other to set up their matches. The finish was hot, but bad that Orton had to take the fall. According to the old rule, I think Orton might retain his title at WrestleMania.
We go to Ian from Swatham, England. There's a danger in reviewing the go-home show from the brand extension era in that we didn't see anything from what would be the main event, Undertaker versus Edge. That being said, overall, this was a solid build with the sizzle drastically outperforming the steak, but that was the intent. The steak was to be served 6 days later. This show is an interesting point in history as seen as transitioning from vanilla ice to vanilla white meat babyface. It's amazing to think that 3 years into his run, he suffered this degree of backlash at a Raw show, and yet he's still a babyface. Face 7 years later. Really, the fans turning on him was evident in mid-2005, and that was when they were really getting out of the rap character and into the focal point of the Raw brand. I mean, those reactions have just, they've become a staple of the show, and I mean, it's just what they are. I think we can admit, though, that the 8-bit video game cover was seen as best t-shirt ever. I guess that's a question for one Braden Harrington.
Yeah, I don't know.
3 segments wrapped up everything that was good about the show. The first was the tried and tested 20-minute opening promo where the ring is filled up with a series of interruptions leading to the announcement of a main event tag featuring these very same participants. The second was the iconic promo between Flair and HBK. It's worth mentioning that HBK adapted his style in this feud to become the perfect foil for Flair's manic delivery. The usually charismatic HBK became quite stoic, both in his delivery, but also through his body language. He really should do promo classes for the young up-and-comers. And he gives us 7 Santino Mohawk rat tail combos out of 10.
We go to Brandon from Charleston, South Carolina. I had 2 main takeaways from the show. I loved how each program felt uniquely important. It was a stacked roster, and guys that weren't in the main event still felt like a big deal, with each program having something of consequence. Compare that to today, where Daniel Bryan is half-assedly thrown into the IC title mix with perennial jobbers like R-Truth after failing to main event WrestleMania. Secondly, there's a giant gaping hole in the wrestling world not having JR hyping the road to WrestleMania. You felt his words, and you truly believed what he was saying. The only current announcer that relays the importance and emotion of the program is Moro. Rinaldo, also having a neutral authority figure with Regal only showing up when needed was quite refreshing. You'd think the WWE would reflect on things that made them so successful and bring certain storylines back. All in all, a fun 2 hours that made me miss the feeling I used to have when watching the WWE.
We go to Christian Small. This show focused on pretty much nothing but WrestleMania, as it should have. By the end of it, the show Mayweather and HBK Flair matches seemed like must-see. Sadly, I didn't get that feeling for the WWE title match, which suffered from your 2 babyface challengers doing bad comedy to open the show. Thankfully, they got more serious as the night went on, and the fact your champion tapped out to Flair in the main event. I've always been a big Maria Kanellis supporter, but she wasn't great in the ring back here, nor were a lot of the divas. They really seemed awkward working together, but at least they got reactions, I guess. One other thing, I can kind of understand why Batista, who was a SmackDown guy, might be at a Raw, but why was he in his gear? Was he just backstage in his gear for kicks? Yeah, he very much has the Randy Orton symptom that you always... It's not just bring your gear to the venue, it's wear your gear to the arena. Overall, this was fine. It did its job of hyping up Mania very well, and the highlight for me was the Shawn Michaels Flair promo. That was really the last time we saw glimpses of the old Nature Boy, in my view.
Bill from Hamilton. Even back in 2008, I couldn't get excited about anything involving Cena and Orton together, other than their decent feud a year prior. To me, something never clicked with the two, despite the WWE trying to convince us it was this generation's version of Hogan and Savage or Austin and Rock. Throw Hunter in the equation, someone who I love every bit as I hate, just didn't help matters, and the whole issue just always felt contrived. To me, the anticipation on the Raw side of things belonged to Flair and Michaels, two of the finest storytellers in the game. Nobody could possibly screw this up, most likely because the two of them would never let that happen. The drama of this angle was built around two men and their will to win for different reasons, and what winning as a whole meant to both men above their friendship. I can't ask for a much better story.
Okay, we go to Alan from England by way of Japan. I wasn't watching at the time, so this was all new to me, though the sheer amount of familiar faces made it instantly accessible. Saying that, it does say a lot about the WWE's ability to make new stars that the majority of the main players in the big angles leading into WrestleMania 24, that being Orton, Big Show, Cena, and Triple H, are major players leading into main event angles at the event nearly a decade later. As much as I personally am not a fan of Reigns, I hope he catches on, if only to bring some more variation to the main event scene. As someone who finds the current 3-hour Raws unwatchable, this zipped along at a good pace and was an easy watch. The ratio of promos to actual wrestling was well balanced, with the Flair Michaels promo being my highlight of the show, and it did create a desire in me to watch WrestleMania 24, which I've never seen before. So I suppose it was successful in what it wanted to do. The only real issue, in my opinion, is that Orton felt like an incidental part in his own title match. They were definitely pushing the match as more of a meeting of Triple H and Cena, in my opinion, at least. 6.5 old yellers out of 10. Yes, how did you enjoy the 2-hour Raw, Way? Was this a nice throwback to what a television show length should be?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It didn't really feel tiring to watch.
Well, if you thought this was an enjoyable length, wait till a couple of weeks when we watch the Saturday night's main event going into WrestleMania 3.
Well, how long is that one?
1 hour.
Whoa.
And as a week, you are on a vacation, so very timely.
Yeah, that's perfect.
A very easy watch coming up. So
awesome.
We should outline our next couple of weeks going into WrestleMania, the reviews on this show. Next week, coincidentally, we will be reviewing WrestleMania 24. And then after that, we are going to do, as I just mentioned, the Saturday night's main event setting up WrestleMania 3 from 1987. It'll be the final Saturday night's main event before the show. I believe it was mid-March of 1987 going into WrestleMania 3, and then we'll finish off our WrestleMania reviews with a review of the show from the Pontiac Silverdome in front of 78,000 fans, as I'm sure we're going to get outrage from people who just...
78.
It's like saying, I don't know, what would be a comparable thing to put into question? I don't know. The validity of the Bible, maybe?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that reaction says it all. There's some wrestling fans. Yeesh. I mean, that is their gospel. 93-173. Okay. Well, anyway, so that's what's coming up over the next couple of weeks.
The words of John Pollock do not reflect those of my own.
No, Wade co-signs everything that comes out of my mouth.
Nor do they reflect the views of Live Audio Wrestling or the Fight Network.
All right. Well, hey, I'm just saying a reaction that some may have to said attendance figure. But we will chat about WrestleMania 24 next week on the show. As we always do, plenty of shows up on the site. We have Sunday night's edition of The Law featuring the grappler, Lynn Denton, and that full interview will be on the website Thursday morning. A great chat with Dan Lavransky. If you're not even familiar with The Grappler, I very much encourage you to check this out. He has a great book out discussing that. We have Review of Raw from Monday night. That is up. And then later today, Bauer and Pollock, where we will chat all this week's news and get a definitive answer on the status of our Mayweather-Pacquiao.
Mm-hmm.
Will it happen? Because you don't want it to happen two years too late.
No. Especially not with Kurt. He'd be like 60 by then.
Whoa. Man, shots fired. So that is going to wrap us up, folks. Thank you for listening. As always, you can go over to liveaudiowrestling.com, tweet your support at way0937. The man is vigorously training with a multitude of different opponents, new techniques. I saw him the other day breaking down the Ronda Rousey finish of Kat Zingano frame by frame in his office, taking notes. I'm very concerned for One Court Bauer. There may not be a Bauer and Pollock show to do after Grapple Kingdom if it happens. There may not be.
There may not be an MLW. There may not be a Wale Mania 2.
Oh,
there may not be a JR's live show.
Wei might make court Wale in anger and pain from this suffering that he is going to put him through.
Wow. Oh, you really are the Joe Rogan of countdown specials.
If Rogan was ever able to subscribe to puns, I think we would be the exact same person.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what's the difference? We do podcasts, follow fights.
Done.
No difference.
Nope.
Other than maybe what our modes of relaxation involve. Me a coffee, him a vaporizer.
Sure.
Which way? Another technique he is drilling, the vaporizer.
Right.
So he's getting set, folks. So hopefully Grapple Kingdom doesn't go up in smoke. We'll find out later tonight on Bauer and Pollock. And to close out the show, he was mentioned earlier, Mauro Ranallo, because if you remember at this time, way in 2008, we were doing Fight Network Radio. And mm-hmm. the day after this Raw, Mauro had one of our favorite guests on the show where to introduce this man, there is only one question Mauro Ranallo could ask the person and where he's at.
David, are you there, my man?
I'm here, Mauro. What's going on, dude?
Hey, buddy. Well, we're gearing up for a massive weekend, buddy. I know
oh,
that.
Oh, my God. The next 8 days is insane.
It is crazy. And I understand that you were supposed to be maybe going to the WrestleMania festivities in the Hall of Fame, but you've been sent by your other employer, Yahoo, to cover Strikeforce on Saturday night.
Yeah,
is that right?
I'm doing Strikeforce on Saturday night, so I can't be in Orlando at the same time, which really, I mean, this is the one Hall of Fame I really wanted to go to with The Rock being there and
right.
with Rick, obviously Ric Flair's induction. So I'm just going to have to watch the TV and then get the videotape, I guess.
Well, let's talk quickly about the Hall of Fame ceremonies because you're right. It is a big one with the likes of Ric Flair, of course, right up there. Chief Peter Maivia and Rocky Johnson, who, of course, are related to The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, his father and his late grandfather. And someone who, thanks to you, I just found out, is going to be announced tonight. A guy obviously very close to my heart, a guy that I definitely looked up to when getting videotapes back in the day. And someone who I think if you're anybody in terms of a wrestling broadcaster or announcer in general, the dean of wrestling announcers, Gordon Solie, the late Gordon Solie, is going to be inducted. And I'm wondering, do you know who is going to be making that induction?
Yeah, Jim Ross is going to do the
awesome speaking. Well, that's tremendous, and I'm really glad that they're putting Gordon Solie. I guess Dave, for those who weren't familiar with Gordon Solie's work, if you quickly, who would you best compare him to in terms of mainstream sports, or what did he mean to professional wrestling as an announcer?
Oh God, I don't know who I could compare him to. I mean, I guess, you know, he was the guy in the 70s and some of the 80s and probably the 60s before my time. I mean, the one thing that I remember, the story I remember about Gordon Solie was Leroy McGurk, who was blind, got a tape of a Gordon Solie calling a match with Danny Hodge against Hiro Matsuda for the World Junior Heavyweight Championship. And when the match was over, Leroy McGurk said, "I saw that match."
Wow.
And that was the kind of an announcer Gordon Solie was. And I mean, he was just a class above all of the wrestling announcers. He had, I mean, I learned my vocabulary watching Gordon Solie when I was 12 years old.
Exactly.
From tapes from Florida, because he would use all of these words that you never hear in real language. You know, I mean, parts of the body, and you know, he would have been a great MMA announcer if that was around in the 60s and 70s. He didn't overplay everything and yell and scream and things like that. It was a different kind of announcing. But you know, for the wrestling that they did in Florida, and you know, he became more famous nationally off Georgia Championship Wrestling. You know, he was the man in that era.
Yeah, no doubt about it. He really wasn't the carnival barker type. Like, he really stressed the athleticism, and like you say, called it like a real athletic competition, and definitely worthy of induction into any Hall of Fame. And it's good to see that Jim Ross, who is obviously one of his contemporaries and ranks right up there as one of the best ever, will be doing the induction. Now let's move on to WrestleMania 24 on Sunday, and you know, this is what pro wrestling does to all of us. You know, at times some of the angles leading up to WrestleMania didn't really connect with me, but boy, oh boy, I don't know who was responsible for it last night, but God bless them. What an angle and what a promo, the dueling promos between Ric Flair and Shawn Michaels. That's how Ric Flair should have been booked for a long time, and to give him that figure four finish in the Carolinas, kudos to WWE last night.
Oh, it was really great if you were a Ric Flair fan, but the thing, I mean, when that thing was over, I was just like looking at some friends, and I'm just going like, if he can do this, what's he been doing the last 5 years?
But do you think partly booking, though, Dave? Do you think that that's partly their fault for not allowing him to do that?
I think that it's on purpose, and I think the deal is just that, you know, the one thing about Flair is his ability to bring out emotion in his promo. And as good as like John Cena and Triple H and some of these guys are at promos, and they're very good, they're not in his league. And you don't think about that because they never let him do any promos.
Exactly.
So you think that like those guys, you know, are the best promos in the business. And the thing is that they're the money guys. I actually understand it. It's kind of sad, but you know, those are the guys that carry it, and you don't want some guy who, because of his age, you can't push as the top guy, overshadowing the promos of the top guy. So it's like he was too good at promos, and that actually hurt him for the last several years. But you know, now because his match this coming week is a high profile match, I think that they felt it was okay to let him be Ric Flair. So we got it for one night,
and hopefully
we'll get it again Sunday, and then it'll be back to what we had before.
Yeah, it's sad but true. But like I say, I do applaud, because we you know, take shots at them at every point opportunity we get, but I applaud the booking committee or whoever was responsible for allowing Ric Flair that moment in the sun last night. And Shawn Michaels as well did a great job with the old Yeller promo. That was some good stuff. Now, on the flip side, however, this whole Big Show Floyd Mayweather Jr. thing, Floyd Mayweather wasn't even at the show last night. Is this on the verge of being a colossal flop, or am I just being overly critical here?
I mean, it's hard to say for me, because from a wrestling standpoint, yeah, the angle, you know, if you really look at the history of the angle from start to finish, it's been, they've changed their mind every week. And, you know, the original idea when they booked Floyd Mayweather was completely different from what ended up happening, because just things kept falling apart. And then, you know, when they came up with the idea that Floyd Mayweather would be the babyface and Big Show would be the heel, at least from a size dynamic, that worked, but the fans didn't buy it, so that screwed up too. So then they switched it, and that really didn't work, because you had the problem with the size dynamic, even though the people were willing to cheer Big Show. So now we're a couple days away, and we don't know, you know, like, they haven't really made it clear who the babyface is, who the heel is.
Well, have they made the stipulations clear? Is it a wrestling match or a boxing match?
That's another one. Here we are a couple days away. They haven't decided that. And what I can also tell you is that I know two people who are intimately involved in this match, right?
Yep.
And they both have a completely different idea of where it's going.
Wow.
And this is today. So as far as where it's going, my gut is that they have probably, you know, 3 to 5 ideas, and they don't know where they're going with it either.
What about what I'm anticipating will be the final match of the night, the triple threat? Is that what you're understanding as well? Will be
title? Yeah, that's definitely been my impression.
Okay.
The triple threat goes on last.
What about the way that's been built between Randy Orton, Triple H, and John Cena? I'm usually not a fan of these triple threat matches at WrestleMania, although with these three characters, I'm sure they can pull off a decent match. I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to figure out who's going to be emerging as the champion on Sunday. But what do you make of the whole dynamic between those three leading up to WrestleMania? Have you been a fan of what they've done so far?
I think they've been very good, but I think that it has not been, you know what I mean? Like some years at WrestleMania, like when you have Austin and Rock,
yes,
you know, you have that thing, and they haven't been at that. They haven't been at this level, and really, you know, the match that's been promoted has been the Mayweather match. So,
right.
So in a sense, they've had to take a back seat in the promotion of it. So that's kind of made it kind of fall, I don't want to say fall flat, it's what it is. It's for second from the top, it's been promoted well. You know, I mean, the one that's really, the one that doesn't mean nothing to me and should is The Undertaker and Edge.
Isn't that interesting that you say it means nothing to you? Because I was just going to say lately, and I can see where you're coming from because of the way it's being booked, you know, the Undertaker's winning streak. Edge, of course, hasn't been pinned per se at WrestleMania, but I thought Edge lately has been coming on stronger as the heel that he needs to be in this whole program. But you're right. I think The Undertaker is going to get that monster pop that he always does, but where do they go from there? And that's the one thing that's worrying me about this WrestleMania, Dave, is that, you know, you culminate the biggest event of the year, and then you should have plans going forward, and I'm just kind of worried right now, where are they going after WrestleMania with a lot of these programs?
Well, honestly, you know, the other day I was sitting down and trying to go through, like, different ideas, and they actually have a lot of options, and their business is very strong, so I'm not that worried about where they're going. I don't think they know where they're going, because they're booking day-to-day and week-to-week, so it's not like there's this thing, but they have there's options out there of where to go, and there's so I again, but if you're looking, you're looking at it like as a wrestling fan, where are they leading me to go? And the, and they aren't, because I don't think they know.
Right. What obviously do you expect? Is it going to be Triple H and Undertaker that you expect to emerge as champions coming out of the WrestleMania?
You know, I mean, let's face it. Everyone expects, you know, the four winners to be Mayweather, Triple H, Undertaker, and Shawn Michaels.
Right.
And because of that, I'm thinking that one of them might be wrong, just because in their minds, I think that they feel that they can't be that predictable. And the one that I would almost bet my life on is Undertaker and Edge. So I think that that's not going to change. On the other three, you know, I mean, who knows on the other three? Anything can happen, but we'll see.
Obviously, Money in the Bank booking has had to be changed thanks to Jeff Hardy and his personal demons and what's happened with him being suspended again, losing his house. And obviously, you know, as a human being, first and foremost, I hope Jeff Hardy is able to put it off together. But it's going to be CM Punk, Carlito, Shelton Benjamin, MVP, Chris Jericho, John Morrison, and Mr. Kennedy. Now, looking at that, obviously, Chris Jericho, Mr. Kennedy, maybe MVP. I mean, I wish they could create a new star, but out of the rest of them, I don't know. I mean, they've stopped and started so many times with Shelton Benjamin. I don't know what more he can do. Where do you think that's going to lead in the Money in the Bank match?
Yeah, I mean, I see those three that you mentioned as the three possible winners. I mean, I see absolutely no chance that Carlito or John Morrison, who's the other? There was another.
What about CM Punk?
He's
in the doghouse still.
I don't see any chance of CM Punk either. No, those guys. Jericho, yeah, I think the one thing that hurts Jericho is that I think that they think that he's already a star, so he doesn't need the boost. So to me, that goes to Kennedy, who won last year, and MVP. So MVP, I guess would be the favorite, just because he's never won and because he's the guy who, you know, you can see really made good strides in the last year and can benefit from that kind of a bump.
When we look at this, and we're wrapping this up, Dave, and I appreciate your input as always. When you look at WrestleMania 24, and again, the 24th edition, I know this is tough for you to do because you live and breathe this business and write about it every day, but where do you think it will fit in terms of the great WrestleManias? Is this going to be a great show, memorable show, good show, bad show? Where do you see this fitting in the annals of WrestleMania?
I think it will be a good show, and the key to it being a great show is Ric Flair. If Ric Flair, because Shawn Michaels is going to be great, but if Ric Flair can be close to Ric Flair in the ring and they can deliver, that will be something that we will remember for the rest of our lives. Or if they don't, we may remember that too. That's going to be the most memorable thing. You know, Big Show and Mayweather is going to be a clown show. I mean, that's, you know, it's not going to be anything classic. They're going to figure out a way through it. They're going to run in a million guys or however they're going to do it. It is just, it's they're trying to get through 10 minutes. The three-way main event, you know, will probably be a very good match. The Undertaker and Edge will probably be a very good match. I mean, you're going to get good matches. I mean, but you don't have, there's not the Kurt Angle, Shawn Michaels like a couple years ago where you just go and go like, oh my God, we're going to see, you know, or Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, where we go into WrestleMania and go, we're going to see a classic match we're going to remember for 10 years. I don't think that's on this show. What we got is Ric Flair and Shawn Michaels. Can they deliver a good enough match and a great enough moment? And that's the key if this is going to be a good show or a great show.